Morning. Today's daf in Chagiga's daf Chav Gimel. Last week of the Masechta and the last week of Seder Moed, and we are in the middle of discussing 11 chumras that we find by Kosh over that of Truma. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf top of the Lord Zef Nishmas, Lubin Zaltzman, and we find ourselves on Chav Beis and Beis in the middle of a question. The Mishnah relates to us that 11 different categories. The Chachamim were more machmir, were more stringent when it comes to Kodesh than that of Truma. And the first of those is Kli B'soch Kli, that if I take a Kli and I put inside of another Kli, so under such circumstances the Chachamim were machmir by Kodesh, so that I can't tell the Kli B'soch Kli. So why not? So if you remember back on Daf Chafal, so the Gemara gave one of two reasons. Either Rabbi Elah says that it's an issue of Chatzitza, or the Chafalaf Amad Beis, the Rebbe says it's an issue of Shofar Zanod, that there's simply the opening of the outer Kli is not going to be wide enough and will not allow for communication between the water outside and the water inside, and therefore the water inside is not, it's not mikvah water. It's water, but it's not mikvah water. So two possibilities, the Gemara given Nafkamina, what if I tovel in the basket? Tovel in the basket would be okay, so if the issue is Chatzitza, so the answer would be no, and if the issue was Shofar Zanod, the answer would be yes, and that would be okay. And then we went on and the Gemara continued the discussion Chav Beis, and the discussion then it continued to to take us to the issue of what's the difference between Truma and Kodesh. Meaning, so if this is an issue regarding Kodesh, so why is this not an issue regarding Truma? Should be the same concern, whether it be Chatzitza or whether it be an issue of Shofar Zanod. So the Gemara says that when it comes to Kodesh, so Kodesh is kind of universal. Everyone has some involvement with Kodesh. So they both the Chaverim and the Amei Haaretz. Everyone has to at one point in time be Kodesh, so therefore level the playing field when it comes to Kodesh. So under such circumstances, we're leveling the playing field, so we're going to be more machmir in order to level the playing field. It's kind of like by Hashkacha. You know, there are many different Hashkachas, but like, in other words, when you want to create one unified Hashkacha, so you have to accept basically all the chumras of everybody in order to create one unified unified Hashkacha, just as an example. So here also, so if you want to, in Kodesh, in the world of Tumah Tahara, so we're going to level the playing field. So look, the Chaverim, those who know the Halacha and keep the Halacha carefully, so they're going to understand. They're going to pay attention to Chatzitza, they're going to pay attention to Shofar Zanod, meaning these are concepts that they understand. But if you're not a Chavir, if you're not Ma'aretz, so you're not familiar with this. So when it comes to Truma, so basically the Gemara said yesterday on Chav Beis, okay, Truma. So the Kohanim are careful, the Kohanim are going to take care of themselves. Yes, they're Kohanim Ame Ha'aretz, but the Gemara basically said yesterday, they're their own little enclave. They'll exist. So, but in the world of Truma, people are going to be careful. But in the world of Kodesh, you're going to have somebody toveling, worried about the issue of Chatzitza. The next guy behind him, the Am Ha'aretz, is looking. Oh, you see what he did? Kli B'soch Kli? Oh, okay, fine. I could do the same thing. And he will be totally insensitive to the concepts of Chatzitza and Shofar Zanod. So basically the Chachamim said, you know what, to level the playing field, we're just simply going to be machmir in the case of Kodesh, and that Kli B'soch Kli will not work out. Okay, good. That took us to Chav Beis Amud Aleph. Then the Gemara said, fine, I do understand everything up until that point in time, but Sheila, what about borrowing? Meaning a chaver never borrows a kli from an am haaretz, and it was clear, the Gemara quoted a Mishnah on the bottom of Chav Beis Amud Aleph, a Mishnah from Kalim, 10th parak of Kalim, and then the Mishnah quoted, and then the Gemara quoted a Braisa, which basically made the same point, and that is, there is Sheila, there is borrowing. So if you're borrowing a kli from an am haaretz, so we're back to now square one. So the am haaretz is toveling his Kalim, and he employs the methodology of kli b'soch kli, and he's not sensitive to Chatzitza, and he's not sensitive to Shofar Zanod. So why aren't we worried about that? And it doesn't seem like we're worried about that. So this is basically what we got up to yesterday. We're in Chav Beis Amud Beis. And Ketani Mias. We are about 15 lines on the top of the Amud. The last word on the line is Ketani. So Ketani Mias L'Chavalo. If you look at that last exchange between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, so you will see it on the very top of Chav Beis Amud Beis. Right? La'atzmo te'arana val nitar takli shetiar aso L'Chavalo. Right, that was the back and forth between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Remember, Beit Shammai was of the opinion that if the Kli Cheres of an Am Ha'aretz, that's not Tahor, it's Tameh. But the contents are fine. So, and then Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel like kind of bounced off one another. How can the Kli be Tameh but the contents be fine? What are you talking about? And finally, the last exchange was so you can look at it in the very bottom of Chavbeis Amad Aleph, the very final exchange. Amalem Beis Shammai Kishitarno Ochlem Amashkin Shabatocho La'atzmotiarno Aval Nitar Takli Shitartocho V'lo. But we're going to be matar the contents inside, the food and the drink. We're not being matar for you and me, says Beit Shammai. We're being matar for the Am Haaretz. He's not going to, anyway, he's not going to listen. But in terms of the kli, they're going to use the kli. We're going to use their kli, meaning we're going to borrow their kelim. So obviously, Beit Shammai takes into consideration this idea of she'ela. And it's obvious, Beis Hillel doesn't respond to that. It's obvious that everyone subscribes to this idea that we're borrowing their kelim. So the question on the table is, well, if we're borrowing their kelim, so then how did we solve anything by no kli b'soch kli? And in other words, they're going to tovel their kelim the way they tovel their kelim, and the tefillah might not be good tefillah, and we're going to borrow their kelim. That's the Gemara's question. You see that we borrow the kelim from them. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what happens? Here's what happens. You're right. Chaverim do borrow kelim from Amei Haaretz, and they tovel it. So good. So we tovel their kelim. So that sounds like it should be a proper response. So the Gemara says, how come in the Braisa we didn't see such a response? So the Gemara says, look, because over there the concern is Tumas Meis. Tumas Meis, when a person or a kli becomes tummy through Tumas Meis, so in order to go through a successful purification process, you need Hazah Gimel V'Zayin, sprinkling with the Paraduma on day 3 and on day 7. And so basically, in order to use a kli, here's what has to happen. You have to borrow the kli. And now, with the assumption that the kli is tamei meis, you now have to go through the purification process of the paraduma, which means that you have to hold on to the kli for 7 days, sprinkling it on day 3 and day 7, toveling in the mikvah on day 7, and then and only then you're allowed to use it. And the Gemara just simply says that for 7 days people don't borrow. Right? Lo mushle inshi. So people don't borrow a kli for that kind of duration. That's not normal. So So the Gemara says, okay, fine. I do understand. So we're not going to borrow the kelim. We're not going to tovel the kelim. Not under these circumstances. But the Gemara wants to know, what about ne'emanus? Meaning, what about just simple credibility? The Gemara quotes a brisa. Ne'emanim ame aretz al taras tevilas tamim meis. If a ame aretz makes a declaration that he purified himself from tamas meis, ne'emanus, you believe him. So the Gemara says, "Amar Abaye lo kasha habegufa habekelav." So the Gemara says, "Well, Abaye says I'll make a distinction. Yes, they'll have ne'emanus on their body if they say that they came into contact with Tumas Meis and they tovel in the mikvah. I mean, not just tovel in the mikvah, but went through the paraduma of day 3 and day 7." So Gemara says, "Fine. In that regard, we're going to believe them, but not on their kelim, but not on the utensils." And you have to really think about why the Abaye would make such a distinction. In other words, ne'emanus for their body, but not ne'emanus for their kelim. Right? Why we are only? Why it's a limited credibility? Okay. Anyway. Yeah. Correct. I was thinking something like that. Meaning, if the tumah's on them, so they're gonna. You know, it's correct. Gary, their belief that they got rid of it. It was just something that really bothers them. If it's just their kelim, yeah, something along those lines. Anyway, Rava Amar, Idivida Bekelov. Now, really the truth of the matter is that we can say the Braisa that they have Nemanus, and at the same time we can also hold the other Braisa in as well. Which is the other Braisa says that we're not gonna borrow their Kalim because they're Kalim or Tame. Well, what do you mean? Can they just simply say they're Kalim or Tower and aren't they believed? So the Gemara says, Velo Kash Hadamar Meolam Lo Hitbalti Kli Beso Kli. So the Gemara says it depends what they're saying. If they're saying, look, as a practice, we never tovel kli b'sof kli. We never toveled in the mikvah two kelim, one within another. We never did that. Okay, at that point in time, good. So if that's what they're saying, ne'emanus, credibility. But if they're saying, yeah, we did tovel kli b'sof kli, but, we were worried, we were concerned about shfafer sanod, so then the Gemara says at that point in time, we're not going to believe them. And the Gemara says, and Hatanya, the Gemara says, and we have a brisa. This brisa supports. Right, to say that if an Amaretz comes over and says, well, these pears, they never were susceptible to tuma. Meaning, they were never moksha lakabal tuma. Okay, they never got liquids on them, and so therefore they were never moksha. So for that, good. That you can believe them. But once they say, hukshuru, yes, they were prepared for tuma. In other words, liquid came on the fruit, and therefore it is mukshal lekabel tuma. But after that point in time, we're sure they never come into contact with tuma, so then we're not going to believe them. So basically, once they put themselves in a more susceptible position, here I mean it figuratively and literally, so then at that point in time, they kind of lose their credibility. It's only when they say in the very onset, look, never became mukshal. So if to that degree, the Amaretz is going to have credibility. Similarly over here, when it comes to the Kalim of an Amaretz, if they say, look, we never told the Kli B'Sol Kli. We never did that. So that means that by design, they always told in a proper way. So the Gemara says, fine, so that they have credibility. But once they tell you that, look, yeah, we told the Kli B'Sol Kli, but don't worry. So once you hear the words, don't worry. So right. So that's when they lose their name. That's when they lose their credibility. Wait, any one of the Zion Mashkin?
No. I'm sorry. How do you make it Torah once it's Torah?
Oh, the food? No, the food. No. Food doesn't become Torah. No, at that point in time, the assumption is the food's Torah. That's it. Period. Good. Good. That's exactly the point. The aguvo mi mehem, and the Gemara says, okay, well now, so you're saying that regarding their own personal body, they have nemanus v'atayin. The Gemara quotes another brisa, chaver shabal lahazos mazin alav miyad. Let's say the chaver comes to you and says to you, I need hazah, so mazin alav miyad. So in other words, you can give him hazah right away. Now remember, in order to go through the sprinkling of the paraduma, when does it have to occur on day 3 and day 7? So if a chaver comes over to you and says, okay, I'm ready for hazah, what he's also saying is that I didn't come into contact with Tumas Meis today. I came into contact with Tumas Meis 3 days ago. And now I'm ready for my first Hazah. Good, so he's a Chavr. So you believe him. He has credibility. However, but if an Amaretz comes over to us and the Amaretz says, hey, I'm ready for Hazah, so you say, okay, let's wait 3 days. Well, what do you mean, wait 3 days? I'm here, I'm ready. And, a sprinkling can only occur on the third day? Oh, today's the third day. So the Gemara says, for the Amaretz, you don't believe him. You don't have credibility. So now the Gemara is bothered. We previously said that the Amaretz does have credibility, and not only that, the Braisa says, the Braisa we quoted about 6 lines ago, and the Gemara says, Nemanim Amaretz al Taras Tfilas Tami Meis, that they do have credibility. And now the Gemara is quoting a Braisa saying, when they come to you and they say, we're ready for a sprinkling, you'll say, okay, well, let's wait 3 days. That doesn't sound like credibility. So the Gemara says, "Allah Amar Abaye, mitoch chomashe hichmart alav b'tchilaso, he kalt alav b'sofo." Abaye says, "Yes and yes. The yes, this most recent brisa, and yes, the previous brisa. Yes, this most recent brisa were machmir in the beginning, meaning when they come to us and they say we're ready for hazah. So okay, you'll wait 3 days, okay, and then we'll start hazah number one, and then on the 7th day from today we'll do hazah number 2. Good. So that." Yes, we're going to be machmir in the beginning. But because we're being machmir in the beginning, now, post facto, they come to us and they say, we went through the tahara process, we were sprinkled on day 3 and day 7, so the Gemara says, now we're going to be makel. So, again, we're really painting the edges, if you will, in terms of what kind of credibility the Amaretz has regarding his tahara, regarding his purification. So, in terms of his guf, so basically he has credibility. Again, with one chomer, and that is that when he comes and he says, I'm ready for tefillah, we have him wait 3 days. And if we don't know that he already waited 3 days, we have him wait 3 days. So in that regard, but generally speaking, he has credibility. He comes and he says, yes, I came into contact with Tumas Meis, but yes, I went through a tahara, so in that regard, he's believed. What about his kalim? So his kalim is a slightly, maybe different story. So according to Abaye, he has no credibility in his kalim whatsoever. According to Rava, no, it's there is some credibility. If he says that here's how I tovled, and the way I tovled was always glot, if you will, just to borrow a term, I tovled in a glot manner, so in that case, you believe him. But once he says, well, You know, I did some things which are halachically questionable, but I'm sure it was okay, right? I told the Kli B'Sol Kli. So then, to that degree, we do not believe the Am Haaretz, the Gemara. That's Rava's understanding of the degree of credibility that he has regarding his toveling of his kill. Okay, admittedly, that's a difficult sugya, and it won't be the most difficult sugya that we're going to be seeing this morning. So good. What's coming up is going to be even a little bit more difficult, but fine. Okay, we've got the basic idea. And that is now number one in the Mishnah, in Chagiga, in Daf Chaf Amud Beis, the beginning of the third paragraph. The Mishnah has gone over now. It went over with us 11 chumras that we have by Kodesh over that of Truma. Number one is that when it comes to Truma, you can tova kli b'sof kli. When it comes to Kodesh, you cannot tova kli b'sof kli. That's number one. Two reasons that are given. Practical differences between the two reasons that are given, and then the discussion of do we ever borrow their kalim, and if the answer is yes, which it sounds like, so then how are they afforded credibility? The Gemara responded to that question as well. Okay, next. Acharech v'toch. What did the Mishnah say? Mishnah says that if the kli becomes tame, but a part of the kli becomes tame, so when it comes to truma, you only need to immerse a part of the kli. When it comes to kodesh, you have to tovel the entire kli. Now, I stated back in the Mishnah, which you'll see in the Gemara, and we're about to see right now, this is going to be correct. I said back in the Mishnah, again, if a kli becomes tameh, you don't look at only a piece of the kli and say, oh, only that piece is tameh. Generally speaking, in the world of Tumah Tahara, it's all or nothing. Okay. So either the entire kli is tameh or not. The kli is not tameh. And I made the comment also back in the Mishnah. It's the same thing with Yadayim, the hands of a person. Hands of a person are tameh, the rest of it matar, on a Torah level that doesn't exist. Again, the Chachamim impose certain tumas, and just as an indicator that their tumas are derabbanan, not daraisa, so therefore they limit it to parts of the body, meaning specifically the hands. The hands are tameh, the rest of the body is tahor. Good, that's Yadayim. In the world of Kalim, such a similar concept exists. That when it's a derabbanan tuma, so the chachamim limit the tuma to only a part of the kli. And now we will see this inside. And the point that now the Mishnah is making is that in the world of truma, if I have part of the kli that becomes tame, fine, so just tumble that part of the kli. In the world of kodesh, even if it's a tuma derabbanan, and even though only part of the kli becomes tame, but for kodesh, if I'm going to use the kli for kodesh, I need to tovel the whole keli. And now the Gemara is going to go on to just give a brief description. Acharech v'toch, ma'acharech v'toch, yididnan, the Gemara quotes the Mishnah. The Mishnah, klisha nidma achorv, mashkin achorv, tameim tocha, ognav v'azno, v'yadav tahorin. If I have a kli where it's achorav, where the outside of the kli gets tummy with mashkin or liquids, Rashi points out this is a tumah derabbanan. Take a look at Rashi, Mashkin. Rashi's basically in the middle of the column. The tumah derabbanan, the medaraisa, ain ochel mashkin matame kli shein kli mekabel tumah elam yava tumah. Right? We know that when it comes to mashkin, aside from the secretions of the of a zavar, neither your lettuce. Aside from that, but generally speaking, if I have liquid which is tameh coming into contact with the kli, it's not going to be matame the kli on a daraisa level. Good, that's on a daraisa level. But now the Chachamim imposed the Rabbanan. And Rashi writes, She'en kli mekabel toma ela me'ava toma. The gazur Chachamim, she'u mashke metamim kli lefi, she'yesh mashke she'u ava toma, o metamim kli me'na Torah kegon, rogo shozav, o me'mav raglav, hel kachol v'toma zu medivrei stofrim, achorav t'meim v'shar tashmin shebo tahorin. Look, the Chachamim made a gzera. And why did the Chachamim make a gzera? So Rashi says, because of the secretions of a zava zava nida yoledis. So because they're an avatama, so the Chachamim said, look, there is at least a precedent of a liquid being metame kli. So therefore, all mashkim that are tame, that comes into contact with a kli, is going to make the kli tame. But because this is a derabbanan, and the Chachamim want people to know that this is a derabbanan, so therefore, the kli becomes tame, only portions of it. The portions that came into contact with a liquid. So now let's go back to the Gemara, let's see the brice inside. So, klishin it machor bim mashkin achorv tameim. So the back is tame, but tocho, the inside. Ogno, the handle. Aznav, another handle. I guess Ogin is maybe more the rim. So, v'yadav tahorin. nitmatocha, but once the inside becomes tame, kulo tame, so then the entire kli becomes tame. Again, all the Gemara is doing right now, that's not a small thing, but all the Gemara is doing is just introducing us to this idea that there's tumah derabanan. That's all. And now we understand the Mishnah. In the world of Truma, good, tumah derabanan. I only need to tovel the portion of the kli that's tame. But in the world of Kodesh, even though it's only tumah derabanan, I need to tovel the entire kli. Period. Next. Beis HaTzvita. One of the terms that the Mishnah used to describe is what's called the Beis HaTzvita. Right? Look back in the Mishnah. Avolokosh acharayim betoch u Beis HaTzvita. It's a term that, it's a strange term, it's an unusual term. And the Gemara just simply wants to know, what does that term mean? My Beis HaTzvita. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Shmuel, Malkum Shitzof To. The place where you hold the Kli. V'chein Omer v'yitzbat la Kali. By Rus and Boaz. So when Ruth was going through the field, so she was handed over parched kernels. Rabbi Yossi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and you see the word vayitzbat means hand. She was handed to her. So the word vayitzbat for the tzvita that's described in the Mishnah is basically the handle, the place where it's handled. Rabbi Yossi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, makum shenikia das sovim. The nikia das, those people who are delicate and are, you know, won't eat off of other people's plates. That's a good way to think about the Nikiya Adas. So tsov in. So what they would do is that they would take their food and dip their food into, Rashi describes, either mustard or vinegar. And so in the bottom of the plate, you know, those kids' plates where basically they have different, you know, the plates are kind of segmented so that, you know, the main dish goes here and the peas go there, and, you know, so that the peas are never eaten, and there's a special place on the plate where the peas are kept. So basically, similar idea over here. There's a portion of the plate that's kind of carved out for the mustard or for the vinegar, basically where I'm going to dip the food. So that's another understanding of what the word svita means. Okay. Tani Rav Bibi Kameid Rav Nachman Kol Akim Ein Lahem Acharein V'Toch Echad Kachei Hamikdash V'Echad Kachei Hagvul. So whether it is Kachei Mikdash or Kachei Gvul. So there's no idea of the back and the inside. I'm like kachei gvul, my nina truma. So the Gemara says, well, what are you talking about? When you say kachei gvul, kachim that exists outside of Yerushalayim, what is that? Ostensibly, all that is a reference to truma. Truma is kodesh that we eat outside of Yerushalayim. And basically what we're saying now is that when it comes to kalim, I never separate a kli into its components. Whether we're talking about kodesh or whether we're talking about truma. To which now, if that's correct, the Gemara now is going to jump. The Hatanan, the Gemara says, okay, but the Mishnah, Acharayim v'tochu beisat svita l'truma. We said that when it comes to truma, we can separate a kli into its components. Dimla chulon shenas v'atarus ha-kodesh kamard. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. Good point. Maybe we're talking about chulon shenas v'atarus ha-kodesh, like we've said now a third day in a row, kodesh in training. Meaning, when it's not real Kodesh, we're outside the base of Mikdash right now, but we want to get used to the idea of what it's like to eat Kodesh. We're going to maintain the standard of eating Kodesh. And as we've said, and we're going to say this now again, when it comes to the first five or maybe six cases of our Mishnah, so when the Mishnah says we're going to be Machmer and Kodesh, we're going to be Machmer both on actual Kodesh and food that we're going to eat to the standard of Kodesh. And the Gemara says, good, exactly. Gemara says, At Grasa Milsa. Da'amar, you reminded me. Meaning, oh, you're right. Very good. Da'amar Rabba Baravu Achar Asrei Malo Shanukan. Right, 11 categories that we learned in our Mishnah. That was the Machlokas, whether it's 10 or 11, but obviously we're gonna work now with the assumption that's 11. Sheish Rishonos, Bein L'Kodesh, Bein L'Chulin. Shanasa Al-Taras L'Kodesh. The first six are applied both to Kodesh and to foods that I eat with the standard of Kodesh. Acharonos L'Kodesh Aval L'Chulin. Shanasa Al-Taras L'Kodesh. And the last five are only applying to actual Kodesh, but not to food that we eat to the standard of Kodesh. And why? Why are we segregating the first six and the last five? So the Gemara already made this point before, just reviewing. And the reason why is because the first six are rooted in the Araisa concepts, right? The concept of Chatzitza, or the concept of Shofar Zanod, or any of the other concepts mentioned in the first six. So those are Daraisa concepts. They are rabbinic concerns, but rooted in Daraisa concepts. So therefore, we're going to be Machmer both by Kodesh and Chulon Shenaso Taras HaKodesh. But the last five are not Daraisa concepts. They are rabbinic decrees, but not rooted in Daraisas. We obviously have that. So they only are applicable to Kodesh, not to Chulon Shenaso Taras HaKodesh, period. holding a medrash in one hand, holding a barrel of trum on the other hand, that's fine. Holding a medrash in one hand, holding a barrel of kodesh in the other hand, so the Mishnah says that's not fine. So, okay, here we go. This is now the next case in the Mishnah. Okay, so the obvious question of the Gemara is, well, why not? What's the difference? So, kodesh, my time alone, we're on the bottom of chaf, beis amud, beis. So when it comes to kodesh, why not Mishum Maisa Shahaya? So the Gemara says, because of an episode. Okay, we do find this every now and then, where the Gemara is going to cite an anecdote, and the Gzera is based on the anecdote. Just in general, you've heard me say versions of this before, but basically in general, the Chachamim are not going to impose an entire Gzera based on one story, one anecdote. In fact, usually the Gemara says is that if it's a Davish Lo Shchiach, if it's something which is uncommon, so then the Chachamim are not going to make a Gzera. It must be, I'm going to hopefully safely assume, that this anecdote over here is kind of like the Makabe Patish. In other words, it's not just anecdotal, but rather it reflected a general trend that was happening in their time. So the Gemara says, Mishum Aisa Shahaya, the Gemara quotes an episode, which is, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Maisa Be'achad Shehaya Ma'aver Chavish Al Yain Kodesh Mimakom Mamakom. A person was transferring a barrel of wine. The wine had the status of Kodesh, meaning it was going to be used in the Beis Hamikdash. And he was going from one place to another place. V'nifseka ritzua shel sandalo. And the person who was transporting it, the strap on his sandal broke. V'natla. And so therefore it's on the floor. So he picks it up. V'hinicha pichavis. And he throws it on the edge of the barrel. V'nafla la'avir chavis. And it falls into the air of the barrel, v'nitma, and the barrel and the contents of the barrel becomes tame. Okay, if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi points out, nifsika ritzua shel sandalo, medras azav haisa, that the shoe was tame. And what degree of tame are we talking about? Medras azav. V'natla biyado, he takes his hands, and we talk kach naflu la'avir chavis, and it goes into the barrel. Now, we're going to safely assume, in other words, why before that point in time was not the contents of the barrel tame? So we're going to assume that the barrel is when we say chavis, it means it's clay cheres. It's earthenware. Okay, good. Clay cheres only becomes tame only when the tumah goes into the toch, into the inside of the barrel. So because the prior to the strap going into the inside of the barrel, so because it's clay cheres, so therefore the barrel and the contents therein are impervious to tumah. It's only because the strap of the sandal, which was medras, went into the barrel, so therefore, then it becomes tummy.
Does the strap maintain its identity?
Wow, that's a good question. No, is that a good question? I was prepared. Oh, thank God. I was prepared for that question. Let me just reiterate Ben's question. Ben wants to know, if it's a strap of a shoe, so it's no longer kli, and because it's no longer kli, so why should it be tummy? Good. Tosos is bothered by that question. Take a look at Tosos on the top of the Amud. So Tosos says, so Tosis is bothered by the fact that, look, a kli.
Why is that a kli?
Huh? Let's read on. I hear you, but let's read on in Tosfos. Midalo sharin leletata beperike luksharim. Gemara says, look, let's turn to Shabbos, Masech to Shabbos, where the Gemara in Shabbos says that if your strap falls off your sandal, meaning it not just falls off, but breaks off your sandal, you can't pick it up. Why not? Because it's muksa. When is something muksa? When it's no longer clean. So Abai Kazo Basa Rav Yosef, if Sekle Ritsua, the Sandala, Abai was following Rav Yosef and the strap broke off. Umucha da Asala Tautala, and you can't move it anymore. And the reason why you can't move it anymore is because it's no longer clean. Because it's no longer clean, it's muksa. Good. That's the Shabbos halacha. Now we're going to take the same concept and apply it to Tumah Tahara. So if it's no longer clean, it's no longer Tameh. Right? There are basically two ways to be metara kli. Either tovel the mikvah, or break it. Because when you break it, it's no longer kli, and it's no longer susceptible to tuma. So, the question is excellent. Ama lav manahut sarach lamemar. So, I'm sorry, so before I get to the answer. So, good. So, the question's strong. Tosus asked the question. Ben asked the question. So, how come over here, if the strap falls off, or let's say not falls off, if the strap breaks off, it's no longer clean, therefore should be no longer susceptible to tuma. So it's tarach lememer kegon the nishtar ba'achrut suah the ikam mana the hedge yachulach zero. So Tosa says, well, it didn't break off, right? I kept stressing that point. It didn't break off, meaning kind of snapped off to the point where even you and I could easily reattach it. That's not called broken. If you and I can reattach it, that's not broken. Broken means I have to bring it to an umman, I have to bring it to a craftsman in order for him to fix it. That's considered broken. That's Tosus's answer, so it's not considered a broken kli. Or Tosus says, we can give a much easier solution, but you need a different girsa. The Yerushalmi provides a different girsa. Continuing in Tosus, so Amir B'Yerushalmi, Matzino B'Nifzika Sandalo. Oh, that's much better. According to the Yerushalmi, the Yerushalmi goes over the same Mishnah, gives the same explanation, but the Yerushalmi, instead of using the word Ritzua, the Yerushalmi uses the word Sandalo. His entire shoe fell off. Oh, okay, good. So now it's no longer a remnant of a kli. It is the kli. Okay, went into the barrel. Back to the Gemara. Okay. Third line down. So the Gemara says, now you understand our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, based on this incident, and again, it's not just an incident, but it's representative. But based on this incident, the Chachamim and Gzeira, that you can't in one hand hold Kodesh and in the other hand hold the Medrash Zav. Good. So the Gemara says, "Yachi chumaname." Good, but let's continue. Meaning, if we're concerned that the medrash is going to go into the barrel, so what, that should be true by kodesh, it should be true by truma. So the Gemara says, "Hamani Rabbi Chananya ben Akavyahi." So the Gemara says, "Well, the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Chananya ben Akavyah, da Amar lo Asru Ela b'Yardin of Esfina Ma'aser Shahaya." So the Gemara says that when, according to Rabbi Chananya ben Akavyah, when the Chachamim make a gzera, they only make the gzera based on the context of the incident. Meaning what they do not do is extrapolate. They don't say, well, here's what happened, and it happened in the world of Kodesh, so let's make a gzera for everything. He maintains that the gzera derabbanan is only limited to the context of the scenario. And the Gemara says, and how do I know that? Because look elsewhere where he makes a gzera. Well, not he doesn't make the gzera. The Chachamim made the gzera, but his understanding of the gzera. So the Gemara over here quotes a brisa. Okay, it's a Mishnah. Lo yisa adam mechatas the efer chatas vavirem biyarden uvesfina. When you're transporting the water of the chatas, again we're learning a mission together in Parah, so that means that we're talking about Paraduma, we're talking about both the mechatas, the water for the Paraduma, and the efer chatas, and the ashes of the Paraduma, and you cannot, when transporting them, take them over a river, the Yarden. You can't take them on a boat. Lo yame b'tzad zevi yizrikam b'tzad acher. You cannot, right, I feel like Dr. Seuss right now. You cannot throw them from one end of the river to the other end of the river. Lo yishitena p'nei ha-mayim. You can't float them over a body of water. V'lo yukava gabe behema. You cannot have it right on the back of an animal. V'lo gabe chavero. Not on your friend's back. In other words, basically, whenever transporting it, you have to be grounded. That's the basic idea. Meaning, obviously, you're going to be holding the canister of the mechatas and the efrachatas, but you have to be grounded. And LMK, now you raglav nogum bekarka. Your feet have to be on the ground. Avamavirna gabe anesher. Now, carrying it over a bridge, that's grounded. That's considered grounded. And in the Yarden is just an example, but it would be true by the Yarden, it would be true by any river.
Why didn't you just limited to Yarden sense that they follow a specific case.
One second. So Rabbi Chananya ben Akavyah Omer lo asru ala b'yarden uvesfino chamaisa shahaya. And Rabbi Chananya ben Akavyah says, look, there's gzeira derabanan. I agree. But limited. Only. Here's what you can't do. You can't transport the Efer Paraduma and the Mei Chatas only over the Yarden on a boat. Because of the Maisa Shahaya. Good, so what you see is that according to Chananya ben Akavyah, when the Chachamim make a gzera, they limit it only to the context of why the Chachamim made a gzera. So, my Maaser Shahaya, the Gemara says, by the way, we keep referring to this incident. What is this famous incident? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Maaser Ba'adamecha, Shayem Avir, Mechatas, Ve'evachatas, Biyardin of Esfina. So there was an incident where a person was transporting the Mechatas and the Efrachatas on a boat over the Jordan River, and on the bottom of the boat there was Kazai Shomais, there was human remains, the amount of a kezayis, which means that it gave off tumas ohel and baus hashah, and therefore the mechatzis and the efer chatzis becomes tame. Okay, an interesting. Well, the assumption is that it was directly over the human remains. The point of interest, which I spoke to Rabbi about, you know, he wrote a sefer on Parah. So the point of interest is that it's pretty clear from our Gemara over here that the mechatas and the efer chatas is susceptible to tumma. Okay.
Fifth level, right? Well, it is
fifth level, but in other words, it's the item which is going to end up being metara other people, but it itself is susceptible to tumma. It's pretty clear from this Gemara over here. Now, you gotta really think about it, meaning mechatas, okay, it's water. Okay.
But understood.
Just thinking about it. Efer chatas, the ashes of the paraduma, it's susceptible to tumma. What is it? Meaning, what's susceptible to tumma? Kalim are susceptible to tumma. Food is susceptible to tumma. We're here talking about the ashes of a paraduma. And that's susceptible to tumma. It seems pretty clear from this mission it is. And the only question that you have to ask is why? Why is it susceptible to tumma? Understood. Right. But in other words, in the categories of tumma tahara that we know about, what categories does fall under that it's susceptible to tumma? It needs an explanation. I don't have. It could be connected to the concept of chibas hakodesh. But all right, whatever. It's something worthwhile thinking about. So tachu b'karkish asiza ba'os hasha amar lo yisa adam echatz ve'evachatz ve'avrim yadim b'sfina. Okay, ibaylo. Good. The Gemara now just finishing up this topic of holding a sandal on one hand, the medra zav, and holding a barrel on the other hand, which the Mishnah says you cannot do. Ibaylo sandal tame sandal tahor mahu. Okay. The sandal. One sandal was tameh, the other one was tahor. Chavis psucha, chavis stuma mahu. What if the barrel is open as opposed to the barrel being closed? What would be it? Meaning, basically, the Gemara wants to know, to what degree are we extending this gzeira de rabbanan, where you can't hold the sandal on one hand and a barrel on the other hand? So, the incident was that the sandal he was holding in one hand was zav, medra zav, meaning it's tameh. And the barrel he was holding in the other hand was open barrel. So what if I change any of the variables? What if, let's say, the sandal that he was holding was tahor? Or let's say the barrel on the other hand was closed. If I change the variables, is there still gzeira d'rabbanan? The Gemara ends off on this point with a machlokas. So Avra v'nasa mahu, Ravila amar im Avra v'nasa tame, Ravizera amar Avra v'nasa tahor. On this last question of if he ended up carrying it. So tame tahor, so the Gemara brings down a machlokas amongst the Amoraim. Okay. Kalim hanigmar b'tahara. Okay, next case in the Mishnah. Kli is one. Compartmentalizing a kli is two, and then carrying medras is three. So a big day okle chuma medras lakodesh, that's four. Right, I understand the Gemara is skipping a bunch. Untying knots is five, and now we're up to number six. Okay, the kalim are nigmar b'tahara. The kli was finished by a craftsman, and it was finished b'tahara, and the Mishnah says from that point going forward, if for kodesh, I have to tovel the mikvah. Meaning right, obviously before it was finished, before the kli was finished by the craftsman, it's not a kli, and therefore no longer susceptible, no longer. It was never susceptible to tumah. Only at the point of gemar, only at the point where it was completed, then and only then is it susceptible to tumah. And the Mishnah says that if I want to use it for kodesh, I have to tovel it right away. Even if the craftsman says to you, we're good, but for kodesh we're going to be machmir, and for truma we're going to be mako. So the Gemara starts off this discussion. This is now number six in the Mishnah. So the Gemara spent time analyzing one, two, and three. Mishnah, the Gemara skipped four and five. Okay, and now we're up to number six. Kama nigmar b'tahara de gamrina man. So the Gemara says, okay, a little more context over here, some more details. Ilam de gamrina chaver lama lutzvila. So let's say the craftsman was a chaver, good, talmid chacham and a smith. Right, and a skilled laborer. So the Gemara says, fine. So if he's a chaver, great. And why should we be concerned? Oh, the Gemara Amaretz. So the Gemara says, okay, so the Amaretz was a craftsman. So the Gemara says, Nigmar b'tahara kari lehu? So, okay, but that's not going to work out because the Mishnah says it was finished in a state of tahara. If he's an Amaretz, the default assumption by the Amaretz is that he's not careful in Tumah Tahara, therefore he's Tamei, and therefore the Kli, once it's completed and handled by the Amaretz, is Tamei.
What about avoiding animosity?
Oh, right. So, avoiding animosity creates certain stringencies in terms of the processing, but the assumption is that he's tamei. Amar Rabba Bar Shila, Amar Rabba Basa, Amar Shmuel, Olam Degamino Chaver. So the Gemara says, okay, we're gonna go back to our first assumption that the craftsman over here was a chaver. Omishum Sinor Dam Aretz Nafal. So the Gemara says, and what happens is that in a conversation he was talking with an Amaretz, so a little bit of spit ends up on his clothing. From the Amaretz, remember, secretions. The assumption is that the Amaretz is Tamei, and we're going to assume that the Amaretz is a Zava Zava. If it's a woman Nida, you'll let us. But the assumption is that the spittle comes out is also going to be Tamei, and so maybe that the spittle is still on your clothing. So the Gemara says, Amos, Ilem, and Mekamad, Delig, Mary, Halav, Manahu. So the Gemara says, well, if the conversation that you had is while you were working with him, while you work with the Kli, so the Kli is not a finished product, and therefore it's not susceptible to Tumah, Elab, Basa, Degamre. So the Gemara says, it's after you finish a Mizah, Zayrbahu. Yeah, but the Gemara says, but after you finish the Kli, you understand, as a Chavir, as a craftsman, you understand that now the Kli is finished, you're going to be extraordinarily careful, making sure that the Kli does not come into contact with any Tumah. And so for sure, you're not going to let the Amaretz touch it. And if you had a conversation with beforehand, aren't you going to make sure that you don't have any of his spit on you? So the Gemara says, okay, so fine. As a part of the rabbinic concern, entertained the idea that you had a conversation with the Amaretz, the spit went on your clothing, he was no longer there when you finished the Kli, even though he was no longer there, but maybe the spit's still on your clothing, and the Kli came into contact with the spit, or you came into contact with the spit, and therefore you and the Kli are going to be tummy. So the Gemara says, Tefillin, Erev Shemesh Lo.
Don't the principle that we don't fall things are not that common?
I understand.
Rare,
again, it's a chumrah.
There was a possibility that...
And keep in mind, the chumrah is only limited to Kodesh. It doesn't apply to Truma. So, again, getting back to the general discussion that we're having, what's the default? Default is something we're not concerned about, but for Kodesh, we're just simply going to be machmer. That's what it sounds like. Okay. Agreed. So, Masnissen Goloke Rebbe Alazar did not. The Gemara says, now look, it would seem like our mission is not going like Rabbi Lazar. I'm sorry, let me make that point clear. Tefila in Erev Shemesh Lo. Okay, that's the next topic of discussion, and this topic will take us to the Amud Beis. Let's start it now, and then we'll finish it tomorrow. The Chumrah that when a craftsman finishes his Kli, he has to tovel in the mikvah. Again, for the concern which the Gemara gave us, he has to tovel in the mikvah. It sounds like from the Mishnah that the moment he tovels in the mikvah, it's fine, and he doesn't need to wait till the sunset. Generally speaking, if something were tamei, we know the halacha is, and the tumah that it came into contact with is a tumah daraisa. We know that what you have to do is you have to tovel in the mikvah. Then tumas meis needs 7 days, but outside of tumas meis, if you come into contact with an avatumah, tovel in the mikvah and you wait till Erev Shemesh, you wait till sunset, and then and only then do you and the kli become tamei. I'm sorry, tahor. You're right. So to which now the Gemara points out, from our mission, it sounds like you can make usage of the Kli immediately after Tefillah. To which the Gemara says, who doesn't subscribe to this viewpoint? Rav Elazar doesn't subscribe to the viewpoint. His position is that in order to use the Kli, you need to both tovel it and you need Erev Shemesh. Okay. We're going to learn together, we're going to do this tomorrow, we're going to learn together Mishnah Para. The Mishnah Para is going to not clearly make the point, but indicate that according to Rav Elazar, I need both Tefillah and Erev Shemesh. And so the Gemara is going to try to point out whether or not our Mishnah is or is not going like Rav Elazar. Okay, just quickly wrap up. Today we finished the Kli B'Soch Kli discussion within the Gemara. And then we went over today's Daf Chav Gimel. We went over a couple of other of the gzeros that were made by the Chachamim in the Mishnah, 2, 3, and 6. And tomorrow we'll do 6, 7, and we'll go, obviously, continue from there.